What is up, Flock and friends? Welcome to another episode of Talkin' Flock, your full Mingo podcast. It is I, your host, Rob Chappell. Flying solo tonight, we're trying to get the whole gang together, all the co-hosts from the year, Andrew and Grant and Kelly and Kyle and myself, to kind of a post-season wrap-up, roundup, talk through the whole season, and look ahead a little bit. Just couldn't pull the schedule together, so we're going to try that next week. So in the meantime, I opened the phone lines, so to speak, to you, and I got some great thoughts and questions and insights from a whole bunch of listeners that I haven't heard from before, which is fantastic. Love to hear it. So, but first, wherever you're listening to this, subscribe, right? We will have some off-season episodes when we announce signings and stuff like that. So do subscribe so you get an alert when there's a new episode. Follow us at Talkin' Flock on X and on Instagram/threads. We're also on Blue Sky now. If you're on Blue Sky, follow us there. But we're going to talk through this last game real quick. Not to wallow in it too much, but a little bit of separation, and it was not a humiliating defeat, you know, as a 4-1 scoreline would indicate. I'm irritated that on the One League Under the Sea podcast last week, commentator Ross Devenport predicted a 4-0 win for Northern Colorado, which I thought that was absurd. Called him on it on Twitter. I said that's a crazy prediction. Of course, it ends up 4-1. It was not a 4-1 match. It was a 2-1 match that became a 4-1 match because Madison had to chase a goal because it's the playoffs. We'll talk a bit more about that in a second. But what was interesting is Matt put a lineup out here with both Timmy Mell and Sam Rutherton, which is unusual. Timmy Mell has been out with an injury. He's been on the bench for the last couple of weeks, not quite match fit yet. Sam Rutherton has done a very nice job at that center back position in Mel's absence. So to see both of them in there, you know that this is a defensive focused lineup, right? You know that with those two both in the match, you're going to have Mitch Osmond, Jacob Krull, Timmy Mell, and Sam Rutherton all in the back line. So it's going to be a more traditional 4-4-2, which is not what we normally see from Ford Madison. I don't usually love mixing things up in really important games because there's a temptation to overthink a little bit and get a little too cute and get out of what you normally do. That said, what we normally do hasn't been working particularly well in the last few weeks, right? Last couple months. And it's a playoff game that nobody expects us to win. What the hell, let's try something different. So no real complaints about the lineup, except that there's no, Jaden Onan is out, and we'll talk more about that in a little bit. Could use his pace in this one. But by putting in the extra defender, you lose an offensive player, and it was Derek Gebhardt who was on the bench. And I think we could have used him in the first half as well. But clearly the priority is don't let Trevor Armand score on you, which we did, except for those three times that he scored. We did a great job keeping him off the scoreboard, except for those three times. But the first half was pretty cagey, right? Good defending on both sides. It was kind of box to box. Not a lot of big chances early in the match. The early shots were all from distance going both ways. Nobody was really getting in close to threaten the goalkeepers either way. Northern Colorado does get their breakthrough just before the half. I watched this a whole bunch of times. I slowed it down. I still don't know what the hell happened here. Noah Powder, who, by the way, Noah Powder was very quiet in this first half. He's their biggest threat other than Trevor Armand in terms of scoring and creating scoring chances. Arthur Rogers is probably their best player on the ball. But Noah Powder is a massive threat, as we saw in their last match against us. But he was very quiet, except for one shot from distance, one sort of errant shot that wasn't even really much of a shot in the 8th minute. You didn't hear his name very much at all. But toward the end of the half, he gets a ball, long ball up ahead, looking for Norte, who's right at the top of the box. And I don't know what Byrne Shipman was thinking. I think he thought the ball was going to bounce higher than it did and get over everybody and get Norte in behind. And he didn't want to be one-on-one with Norte, which who would? So he came out for the ball to try to punch it away before Norte could get it. He misjudged the ball. The ball didn't bounce nearly as high as he thought it was going to. So he was way up in the air, and the ball kind of hit him in the midsection. Meanwhile, Jake Kroll comes in to try to head it away. So there's a breakdown of communication there. So Jake got in Byrne's way. And Byrne collided with Norte and hit the deck. And he's laying on the ground. That's all the questionable decisions. There's several questionable decisions in there. But there's also some bad luck, which often happens. When you make a bad decision, then you get unlucky. And the ball fell kindly, and the closest person to it is Trevor Amon. He takes one touch to his left, gets around Jake, and just rolls it right into the goal nice and easy, and it's 1-0 right at halftime. And that is such a gut punch going to the half, but we did equalize in the second. Didn't make any big adjustments at halftime, which is nice. Nobody panicked. We just kept pushing and kept plodding along, and it paid off relatively early in the second half. It's one of my favorite goals of the year, actually. A ball comes forward, and Christian Chaney gets on it, nods it over to Nassim Bartman. Soon as Bartman settles with it, you see Stephen Payne come flying by in an overlap, which is very smart. And Payne is so fast, he just gets by everybody. And Bartman does a really nice job on the turn and toss the ball over into space. And Payne was so fast, he was so far behind before anybody could pick him up. He had plenty of time to hold it in the corner and size it up and have a sandwich and watch a sitcom. And I mean, that's how much time he had. But puts a cross in. And finally, one of his luscious crosses actually found, you know, somebody made it pay off. And it gets it all the way to the far post. Tristan Chaney jumped as high as I've ever seen him jump. Gets over Bruno Rendon. Nods it straight down, just like they teach you. And we're level. And it was an incredible, incredible team goal and an incredible effort by Tristan Chaney. Shouldn't also note, Mauro Chichero was right there, too. He could have nodded it in had Chaney not been there. So very good off-ball movement. Very good decision-making. Very clever. Nice goal all around. And the forward club, I was not at the match. I was at the forward club, but the forward club erupted. It was very noisy in there. And then just, what, about 6 minutes later, the gut punch. This was just a tremendously disheartening sequence because it wasn't anything that Madison did wrong necessarily. Except that Bruno Rendon, speaking of him, he's got great pace. Everybody knows that. He comes flying up the right hand side with the ball, and I think he was shooting. I think it was a shot, but it got across the face of goal. I'm not sure if it was a shot or a cross, but in any case, he was in so fast. Our defenders were a little bit disorganized. And Noah Powder was all by himself at the back post, and was going to tap it in. I mean, he was a stand. His eyes got really big, and it was going to be just a tap in to put them ahead 2-1. And Chela Martinez comes out of nowhere and saves the day with a tackle out of bounds, and he celebrated like he'd scored a goal. It was so great because he knew. And if he hadn't intervened, you know, Byrne was over watching Rendon and was cutting off the near post for Rendon. And Powder's all by himself and was going to tap it in, you know, and Jello intervened and saved the goal and saved the day until Arthur Rogers took the corner. And you guys, I have never in my life, I don't think, seen an Olympico at the near post. That is absurd. It is absolutely absurd, and I don't think it's physically possible. You know how they say, like, you know, according to the laws of physics, bees are not supposed to be able to fly. And according to the laws of physics, you're not supposed to be able to score an Olympico at the near post. It's like literally not enough room and not enough distance for the ball to bend like that. But Arthur Flocking Rogers did it. Nobody got a touch on that ball. It just bent just enough. It just was coming in across the face. Byrne went up for it. You know, he feels he'd contend he got fouled. I don't know that he did. But their bodies flying, and the ball just took a left turn and tucked itself in the upper corner. And just to go from Cello saves the day to they score anyway, that's when you know, like, oh, boy, this is just not our night. Of course, never wanted to give up. Matt did make some changes. He actually changed the formation. He changed it back to the 3-5-2 or 3-4-3, however you want to say it, but he brings in Gebhard for Brotherton. So basically abandons the four at the back, goes back to three at the back, and puts Gebhard up top, and then brings in Ozzy Ramos as a defensive midfielder, and along with Pierre Da Silva in the middle. Da Silva, by the way, if we can hang on to that guy next season, man, he put in a shift. Like, he just elevates the level of play, I think, a little bit. When he came in, it just his command on the ball is. Him and Cello are the same kind of player. I feel like that when they're on the ball, it is completely under control. Like the match is under control when he's on the ball. Anyway, so they make the change to try to get forward to try to because you now we're chasing a goal, and it's if you're going to lose 2-1, you might as well lose 4-1 because you know you can start to take more risks. You have to start taking more risks in a playoff match, in a knockout match, when you're down by a goal. Of course, the risk is then you give away a goal, right? We did have a couple shots, a couple chances. We were starting to push forward. We were not giving up. We're looking for that equalizer. Almost got it once or twice, all the way to the 87th minute. And it is you know, you can't just say, oh, we were pushing for a goal, so they got an encounter. It was kind of a bad giveaway. And speaking of Da Silva, it was kind of Da Silva's issue in this moment. We had a good day except for this moment. But Mitch Osman tries to get it to him, to Da Silva, in the middle, and he doesn't. The pass is a little bit errant, and Da Silva was a little bit slow to react to it and lost the ball. Doesn't quite collect it. Danny Robles picks it up, feeds it straight ahead to Amon, and he's through. And he and our defenders... We're not quite ready, first of all. And Trevor Amon, in a foot race with Mitch Osmond, you know, is going to win that. And Trevor shot it right at Byrne's chest, and Byrne was, you know, diving to his right. So the ball, of course, went in. And that's at that point, it's 3-1. Then we're really pushing. We really got a great chance. We forced a really great save out of Lalo Delgado in stoppage time, or in very near stoppage time. But then a couple minutes into stoppage time, Billy King gets it to Trevor Amon again. Well, our back line is all the way up at the center stripe, of course, because now we're down two. Now we're really chasing. And there's really very little point in playing defense anymore in stoppage time when you're down by two. So we didn't. And, you know, we allowed... Amon to get his hat trick. So you look at the stat line, it looks like Trevor Amon just completely annihilated us, took us apart. It didn't. It was a 2-1 game in the 87th minute. Right? Of course, at this point in the season, in professional sports, generally speaking, but especially in the playoffs, there's no such thing as a moral victory. We lost the game. Like, we can't pretend that we didn't. We can't pretend that we were the better team. Northern Colorado was the better team and deserved that win. They were the better team for most of the season, and they were the better team on the night. And that's okay. The game was not as embarrassing as some people would want to think it is. It's not as... if casuals don't look at that scoreline and say we got beat up really bad, fine, they can think that. We didn't. You know, it was an admirable performance. And an admirable season, I think. Trevor Amon... this one had the highest pop bomb rating I've seen this year, I think, at 9.6. And Brent Shipman, on the other side, had the lowest I've seen this whole year at 3.9. He had a rough night. Just to give you an idea, I mean, we had 54% of the possession, which we'll talk more about this later, but our priority, Matt's priority, has been maintaining possession. So not that you get any points for maintaining possession, but that just shows you we did what we wanted to do. We were basically doing the game plan that we wanted to do, and they still beat us. So, you know, at some point you just got to tip your cap and say, you know, we did what we do. You did what you do. You came out on top. We had our passing accuracy was on the low side, however, 80%. In the attack, it was pretty even. Honestly, we had 10 shots. They had 11. We had six corners. They only had two, but they scored on one of them. we only had four shots on target, however. They had eight. So you get more on frame, you get more chance of more of them going in. So anyway, that game, it was a fun game to watch. The other game was also a fun game to watch. The Charlotte versus Greenville match. Charlotte wins this one 3-2. Alan Gavilanes, I actually said curse words out loud when he scored this. Not in anger, but like as in holy, wow, that was a goal. His left foot all the way from the top of the box on the left-hand side in distance. But then Charlotte leveled it with Joel Johnson, and then they broke it wide open in a five-minute period with goals from Gabriel Obertan and Avion Flanagan. Greenville did score in a corner 2 minutes in stoppage time to make it interesting, but that was too little too late. So what does all this mean for this coming weekend? Omaha hosts Charlotte at 4:30 on Saturday, and then North Carolina hosts Northern Colorado in the evening match at 6:30. I'm going to go ahead and make a prediction here. I'll make two predictions. Omaha is going to beat Charlotte, and I think Northern Colorado is going to pull the upset against North Carolina. I think North Carolina, with their last game in USL League One, as they're heading back up to the championship, their last match in USL League One will be a home loss to Northern Colorado. And then I don't think there's any way Omaha loses the final. Say what you want, you know, about Omaha fans on Twitter. Omaha is just the best team right now. I don't think there's any question about that. And anybody can be to anybody anytime, of course. But Omaha just doesn't have a lot of weakness. And they can make mistakes, as we saw in our final game at home. Omaha can have play a really tough opponent and not have a great game and still find a way to win. And I think that's what they'll do these next two matches, and I think Omaha wins this whole thing. Okay, so, you know, if you disagree, tweet at me. That's fine. A couple things before we get to the rants and raves. A couple of news items. We learned this week that John Harkes is not returning to USL League One. If I'm not mistaken, he's the last of the original coaches. He's the one head coach, manager, skipper that's been with our club the entirety of head coach. I mean, Neil has been with us the entire time as an assistant. But the only head coach, I think, that's been in USL League One all 5 years is John Harkes, and he is not coming back. I don't know. There's all sorts of speculation. He's been speculated. There's tons of speculation. Every year, there's speculation that he's going to go to MLS or somewhere else. Now, just because he's such a name and he's done such a good job managing Greenville. I'm not sure that he has anything else lined up, but I think this is not – he's not quitting, really. He's not getting fired. He's just – his contract is up, and he decided not to renew it. So I wonder – I don't know if he's got irons in the fire, if he has an offer on the table, or if he's just like, you know, I'm going to just try something different. I know that I've got the pedigree, I've got the experience now, and I know that there will be options, and he's going to explore them. We also learned this week that USL League One is going to return to North Texas. Texoma, which is to say that area sort of straddling Texas and Oklahoma. It's going to be in Sherman, Texas. They're going to play at Bearcat Stadium, and they're going to begin play in 2025. Sherman, Texas, about an hour north of Dallas. So they're kind of within the geographic range of FC Dallas. you know, they're further away from Dallas. They're closer, I should say, they're closer to Dallas than we are to Chicago or to Minneapolis. Right. So that's a challenge a little bit. But if they can make it work, I mean, North Texas Soccer Club obviously made it work with no fans because they were literally a JV team from FC Dallas. But that'll be fun. Another away day. It would be nice to see more teams drivable for us. But, you know, we'll just keep hoping. A couple news items related to Ford Madison. It appears Christian Chaney will not return. He tweeted that he's going to miss Madison so much. The city left a mark, which and you know, it's only speculation as to why that is. If that's his decision that he wants to try it at a higher level, if he just wants to get back closer to home, or if he just wants to move on and try something different, or if it's from the club, and that he's got a big personality. He's competitive. I don't think he's the kind of guy that would cause locker room trouble, exactly. You know, he's vociferous, I'm sure, and he expects a lot from his teammates, I'm sure. But it also is true that he wanted, you know, 15 goals. He got 12. And I think, like, 8 or 9 yellow cards. So when your goal-to-yellow card ratio is that high, you know, you can be kind of a liability, you know? It's possible that the club, Matt, just needs maybe more out of his highest paid number 9. So anyway, all that, and that could be a combination of things. It could be Chaney just wanted to try it here for a year. Maybe it's always going to be only a year. We don't know. In any case, Matt's got his work cut out for him to find another number 9. And also another number 10, because Jaden Onan is not coming back either, it sounds like. Word is from sources close to the club that Jaden will not return. He was out injured the last 2 matches. He was out injured for actually a lot of this last stretch of the season. But frankly, performed well enough in that number 10 role. He may have options elsewhere. He may just want to go back to England. You know, he had a hard time. He was homesick. He had his family, and he had to leave his family in England. So he may just want to go back home, or it could be again a combination of factors. I hate it. I think he was one of the bright spots for me. He was one of the big surprises for me. This season, he made an impression in his first couple of matches, and then he started to get the assists, and then he started to get the goals, and it was really coming together. And he just brought a certain kind of energy and pace when he came in. So I hate to see him go. That's all we know in terms of players' movement. We'll learn more. I'm not sure. I think USL League One and did their, you know, their first day last year in early December, where all the teams announced a bunch of signings. And I think that was very successful. So I think they'll do that again. And we'll learn a lot more then. We'll have to just wait and see. All right. So let's hear from you now. A lot of you have a lot of really, really interesting comments. A lot of them have nothing to do with the football on the field. A lot of comments about the game day experience. A lot of comments about fan culture. And we'll hear a lot more. But first, let's hear the one voice message we got. Was from Kevin and the FMMC bike crew guy at Mingo Bikes. You should follow him on Twitter. The sound quality on this memo that he sent us is not great. It's not his fault. It's because to extract it from like Google Voice text message thing, I had to like transfer it to another thing and whatever. So so anyway, here's what he has to say. So just listen carefully.
Hey, Cargo Park. This is Kevin McInerney, a.k.a. Mingo Bikes. So yeah, after the playoff loss on Saturday, my friends and I went to a second bar to get a sad beer and just kind of recap the season. And talking to them there, seeing discourse online, I get the impression that I'm more positive about the season than a lot of people are. Looking back on it, I have, you know, more fond memories than anything else. Admittedly, I'm more of a matchday guy than a soccer guy. I do love the sport, and I love Ford, but I don't really follow other teams. I started Kaplan this year, but I'm a lot more involved in that and maybe not always watching the game and more focused on, you know, doing that or getting other people to get up on the stand. But even in that case, just the energy and the vibe this year was so fun. And a lot of that comes from the Flash and the work that people put in to make that happen. But a lot of it comes from the team. Even in our, you know, bad games, there was always, it always felt like we were in it. It felt like we were a good team that was on the cusp of something. There was, you know, it's frustrating to look at over the course of the season. There are a lot of moral victories where it's like, oh, it was a draw, but it could have been a win, or a bounce the other way could have changed this. And I feel like a few things going a different way really could have changed this season. But, like, I don't know, I have a lot of great memories. The Flash penalty kick return for a goal was, I think, a moment we'll always remember. Payne's, like, late game goal. Even silly stuff like Burns wearing a baseball cap, or the time that I got bonked on the head on the Kappa stand, which my glasses are still broken from. I did super glue them, but I did not do a good job. I feel good about this team. I feel like, you know, a few things going differently would have been different. I don't believe the narrative about fading late in the season. Yes, it keeps happening, but I don't think it means anything. I think it's just too small of a sample size. We basically have a new team every year. We essentially had a new coach every year. I know this is greater than the second year, but there's a whole thing with last year he didn't really set up the team. So I wish a stupid Glazer. I think, you know, especially in this league where the coach is kind of building the team and coaching, you know, this great team that we had, even if it didn't get us over the finish line, like, we don't have that team without him. I think he was good at constructing that. I'm glad we made the playoffs, even if, you know, it was weird. There was a bunch of wins in the beginning, losses at the end. Be nice to mix that up or just have more wins in general. I feel good about the team, the fan base, as our attendance numbers keep going up. I think we didn't get it this year, but I think it's coming soon. That's my hope. Maybe I'm an idiot.
And thank you, Kevin, for all that. I love the optimism. I love the that you're not taking it too seriously. I think some of us are jealous of that, frankly. And there's some people here who will, you'll hear some folks who wrote in have a very different way of looking at it and thinking about casual fandom and that sort of thing. So here's a email we got from Ross Larson. Hey, Rob and the flock. There were times this year when I felt like we had the best team we've ever had. We were distributing the ball, dismantling defenses, knocking home solid chances, and holding our opponents scoreless. There were also times this year where I felt our team didn't want to share the field with the other team, didn't play with competitive fire, and was willing to accept a run of bad games. I'd prefer to remember the good times, and I hope that there are more of them. I hope we can put together another good team, and I hope that we put together a squad that can tolerate long road trips and overcome late season struggles. Hope springs eternal. Thank you for that, Ross. I think that your point about road trips is well taken. Everybody has the road trips. It's when they put them together back to back to back that it becomes an issue. And it's a little bit, if you've ever traveled much at all, like when I go to my wife's family's in San Diego, so we go there once or twice a year. And just that just one day of travel, just to get there, is draining. Right. And I can't imagine having to do that and then play a professional football match the next day and then do the same thing the next weekend and then do the same thing the weekend after that. So I have some empathy or sympathy for those guys in that situation. But it is. And I don't know how you put together a squad that is built to do that. I think the league has to be more careful about the schedule. All right. So we got a whole bunch of really thoughtful comments on Reddit. I would encourage you to go look at the thread in the Ford Madison subreddit. But this is from Tyler. I'm posting my rant here because I hope it can spark some discussion. Rob intervening. It did. There's a lot of great comments back and forth on this thought. All very thoughtful, all very respectful. So go look at the thread. Okay, I'm posting my rant here because I hope it can spark some discussion. To be clear, I know how lucky the team is to attract a lot of casual fans, and I promise I'm not just trying to gatekeep the flock end. Fort Madison FC has so much momentum and hype when they started playing 5 years ago. It was the new fun, a new hip fun thing to do in a young, hip, fun city. But along with that, it felt like people actually cared about the results and wanted to see the team succeed. Fans looked at the team the same way they viewed the Bucks, Brewers, and Packers, as a team they wanted to watch win and have postseason success. Anecdotally speaking, back in 2019, the people who would sit around me in the flock end were always pretty knowledgeable about our current roster and recent results. Fast forward to the 2023 season, and I can't help but feel like the team's perception has dissolved into how a lot of people view the Madison Mallards. A fun night out, sure to have some quirky ticket promotion and a goofy halftime show, but do you really care if the team wins or loses? Which, again, speaking anecdotally, the people I interact with now in the flock end in 2023 seem to barely even follow the team's results. They're just there to dress up and sing and pat themselves on the back for being the, quote, best fans in USL1. I think this subreddit is a nice microcosm of the issue I'm talking about. In 2019, there was so much more discussion about results and player signings, whereas in 2023, we don't even have game threads anymore, and the front page is just filled with people asking about tickets and RG chat promoting his podcast, LOL. Long story short, in the 5 years FMFC has been playing, I feel like they've gone from a sports team with actual fans who care about winning to just another fun activity in the city. I have no idea if actual on-field success would have changed this and helped keep the, quote, competitive sports team aspect of the team's fandom growing strong, but I do think the case can be made that the disappointing results have left some of the original diehard fans feeling less enthusiastic about the team, which has just opened the door for more casual fans to come in and take over. So thank you for that, Tyler. And do go read the comments, the responses to that, because they're very thoughtful. I do think, understanding that you're speaking about the flock end, not the entire stadium, because the entire stadium has always been kind of full of casuals, which we'll talk about more in some of these other rants. And I would also venture to say that, you know, you mentioned the Packers, Bucks, Brewers. If you go to a Brewers game or Packers game or a Bucks game, I would guarantee you there's a very high percentage of casuals there, of folks who are just like, oh, I want to go to the Bucks game because the Bucks are good and Giannis is there and now, you know, Lillard is there and it's loud and it's raucous and I have no idea what place they're in. Right? Same for the Brewers and Packers, probably less so. Packers are a little easier. The other thing, another thing though is that people do want to come to these games and have fun, and the flock end is the cheap tickets and known to be the fun place to be, right? So yes, you're going to get some casuals, and one hopes that that's like sort of an entry point, right, where we can get new fans in and like, rather than be bothered by them, you know, welcome them, educate them, get them to come back. And maybe they'll come back if we win more. You know, you might be right about that. But the other thing about it, I'll mention, is as a member of the media coverage of this team has dried up. And it's literally just us now. Like I don't write game recaps very often for Madison 365. For those who don't know, my day job, I'm the executive editor of Madison 365. It's a local news outlet here. And I did match recaps for the first 2.5 years and nobody read them. And so it became not worth the time to do, because everybody who was, who cared about the match was at the match and therefore doesn't need to recap the next morning. Right. That said, and I will say, I know that State Journal, Todd Miliski used to come to every match. He quit coming because nobody was reading the match recaps there either. The TV stations don't cover it anymore. There was no coverage. We made the playoffs for the first time in 4 years, and I was the only one to report on it. The media has abandoned this team, and I think even if you're not reading the recap, just seeing a headline float through your social media feed gives you some sort of ambient awareness of the team, and I think that has gone away largely. And you have to be kind of already a diehard to follow the two podcasts on Twitter to see that kind of coverage, right? I'm already thinking about talking about doing more coverage, more digital online coverage besides the podcast next season. So I'm hoping maybe to amp that up a little bit. But they didn't even – I mean, going into the playoffs, this is ridiculous, you guys. Going into the playoffs for the first time in 4 years, they did not have a media day. They didn't have an open practice for media. Of course, they didn't have a media person to do that, which I understand because Evan left. But I suggested it, and they didn't do it. And not that anybody would have come anyway. I probably would have been the only member of the media there. So when you talk about awareness of the team and its fortunes and stuff like that, I think media coverage has a lot to do with that. Okay, moving on. Chad says that he's a day one or pretty close to season ticket holder here. Firstly, love the pod. Thanks for putting in all the effort to make it happen on a regular basis. You're doing God's work. I'm going to just repeat that part in case you didn't hear it. I love the pod. Thanks for putting in all the effort to make it happen. I'm doing God's work, says Chad. Thank you, Chad. Okay, to the post. I agree with Tyler's sentiment, but also Rob's follow-up that this club has always brought in a good amount of, quote, casuals. I know a lot of folks who don't give a rip about soccer as a sport, or any sports for that matter, that will go to a handful of games each year because their friends are visiting from out of town or because it's a fun, unique Saturday night activity. Rob's going to jump in here and say also, just this is a yes and, like you're absolutely right about that. Also, there's a whole bunch of soccer fans who don't follow American soccer who will come just because, oh, there's soccer here? I didn't know that. Like my father-in-law, for example, won't watch MLS. It's not good enough for him. He's a Premier League guy. So he'll watch every Premier League game all the time and doesn't care about American soccer, but I'll bring him to a Ford Madison game because, oh, there's local soccer. I can go see local soccer. So it's people who are soccer fans who don't know anything about USL League One or Ford Madison who will come for a casual game. But also the people you mentioned who just want a night out because it's fun. I also appreciate the flock helping maintain a core soccer passionate base of supporters too. I think it's a good balance between hardcore and casual fans right now. But I think more success on the field would help solidify some of those frequent flyer casuals into more hardcore forward fans. And while the most important thing is that our stands are full, not necessarily who's in them, it'd be nice to have more hardcore fans, if not for anything else, than to guarantee a higher floor of attendance and thus money for the club. It's hard to know how much the casual fans care about success, especially if the fan experience can remain the same no matter where we are on the table. But it's not an experiment I'd like to see play out. You also don't want to risk turning off the passionate hardcore fan either if we become perennial underachievers. If the team can finally turn that corner and become a legit contender each year, or at least win some home playoff games here and there, we won't have to worry about losing fans of any type, and thus all of the pizzazz that comes with the income generated by high attendance, which makes our game so much fun. Now, once you start throwing in pro rel, well, that becomes very interesting. I like to think the inherent drama of it would draw some eyes no matter what. But man, if we get relegated, that could be a killer. Also hoping the women's team, it's the Super League team that's starting in 2025, for those who aren't knowledgeable of that. Hoping the women's team brings in some new fans. And definitely hope there's a lot of joint events, promotion, support between the men's and women's team. Could help bolster both fan bases if you make an effort to do so. Here's to next year. Thank you very much for that, Chad. I think you're right about the women's team. I think more soccer is better, and we'll, it'll all just grow together. I think you're right. Reddit user Mahogany Wind writes, well, I could always complain about how we've gone three seasons in a row with a collapse halfway through, or how we are completely unable to score. I can't decide if the lack of scoring is due to poor strategy to score or due to players who are unable to. Both years with Glazer resulted in us being the team with the least goals in the league. And in 2021, we were close to being lowest. To respond, I think it's both. But I would say, and not to say that you're wrong about this, Mahogany Mint, I would say it's not necessarily poor strategy, but it's an intentional strategy. Matt's the identity for this club is possession first. Their priority when they gain possession is to keep possession. They've been very clear about that. So when we turn the ball over, when we get possession, our first priority is secure possession and then keep possession. We're not always necessarily going after goals because possession does lead to goals eventually, and it keeps the other team from scoring. Obviously, we built a very, very strong defensive unit and defended really well for the most part. And I think Matt's strategy, Matt's game plan, Matt's identity is to grind out. If he could win half the games 1-0 and keep the other half 0-0 draws, he'd be very happy. That's how he thinks he can win matches. So it's not necessarily poor strategy. It's they're actually doing the strategy they wanted to do and therefore not scoring a lot of goals. But then also they're giving up. I mean, you still have to score that one to get the 1-0 win, right? And you still have to, if you're putting that much emphasis on defense, you can't give up 4 goals in a playoff game, right? So I think it is partly the strategy, but it's also partly execution that we've had lots of chances that didn't get finished because we just didn't quite have the talent to finish them. So I think you are 100% right, and I think it's kind of both. All right, the Ferris Ferret on Reddit says, 2 rants. And this is really interesting. I hadn't thought about this, but this is good. I adore the flock, but allow organic chanting. Any chant that starts as a result of something on the pitch isn't allowed to grow or happen. Instead, they keep going with the same chant, FMFC is the worst for this, for 7 minutes. The crowd isn't allowed to react to the game in the slightest. They're just expected to sing along to the same song over and over for far, far too long. It feels inorganic, and it's the reason myself and 10 or so of people I know don't go to the flock anymore. Let the crowd be passionate. Let them be mad at the refereeing decision. We don't have to stop chanting when their player goes down for cramps for the 9th time. The other thing I'll mention, it's the chants, the songs don't really react to what's happening on the pitch other than the whooping noises for opponent set pieces, which everyone appreciates. We did in our first year, we had a song for Down Smart. I don't know if it ever actually got deployed in a match, but I know there was one. But a lot of teams have specific songs for specific players. If you watch Welcome to Wrexham, Wrexham has a Super Paul Mullen song, right? I think that would be cool if we had songs related to specific people. But I get this, or more organic would be nice. All right. The second rant from him or her, Ferris Ferret. In the last 2 seasons, 1 win in the final 20-odd games between the two is flocking ridiculous. 100% agree with that. Way too many losses in the second half of the last 2 seasons. Okay. The last set of rants here. Oh, no, I'm sorry. There's 2 more. Michael CJ5 writes, as a day 1 season ticket holder, I'd like to see the club deliver more of the benefits they say comes with being a season ticket holder. The discounts are great, of course, but the gift card for concessions has no buying power whatsoever with prices that the way they are. They say there are special season ticket holder events, but there really aren't. We've gotten a couple of promotional items, the warm-up and the trek top, but it's not like those were exclusive. And I've literally never worn the trek top. Just something that's been making me debate keeping my season ticket holder the last couple of years. Obviously, the point of having a season ticket is that you always have a seat. But you're right. When the club promises additional perks and benefits to as being sort of a member of that club, right? Or that sort of you make that commitment, you get little enticements to make it. And to entice you to into it, they got to deliver on those. And I think they do. I mean, there are special events and stuff like that. Maybe they're not what you want or they aren't enough. And I think you should, communicate that to the club. And I think you're not wrong to say that. If the additional perks aren't enough to do it for you anymore, let them know that. Okay, now this is the last set. And this is from a Reddit user who wanted to remain anonymous. And it's either Mass I Mover Rucci or Massy Mover Rucci. Mass I'm over Uchi or Massy Mover Rucci. Anyway, okay. The flock is too loud. I see Burn frantically trying to tell Mitch and them something, but they can't hear shit. Interesting take. I don't think the players would agree. I think the players like it loud. Rant. The pitch at Breeze is garbage. We all know this. Yes, both teams have to play on it, but not for 15 games. You're 100% right about this. The club knows it. I think one of the things that we're going to see in the next 2 years as the women's team comes in as a tier one team, right? The USL Super League is trying for top tier status. The pitch has to improve to be played on by a top tier team. Like, you know, Fort Madison's third division, you can get away with a crappy pitch in third division. You can't in the first division. So there will be a new pitch, I'm pretty sure. Okay, another rant related to the first. Having all these fans creates too much pressure to perform. And opposing teams coming in circle this date on their calendar as their Super Bowl because they play for like a dozen fans at home and they want to beat the club who thinks they're such hot shit. Again, interesting take. Wishing we had fewer fans. It's bold. I get it. I don't necessarily agree. You're right that opposing teams come in and they want to beat us at home. Like, that's for sure. They want to beat us in front of the biggest crowd and the loudest crowd, whatever. And it's way better than playing where they play usually, where there's like, you know, like you say, a dozen fans or so. But I don't think that means we should have fewer fans. Maybe our guys just have to be a bit better at holding the pressure. Okay, another rant. We recruit all these dudes with experience, but to me that can mean set in their ways and maybe a bit comfortable or complacent. Also may not be thrilled to be back in USL 1 if they sniffed higher levels. Other teams that don't have the dough to pay for experience recruit young, hungry dudes with a lot to prove. My response to this is we tried it both ways. Carl Craig's crew was a lot of them, if not most, were on their first professional contracts. And a lot of those guys have moved on and are doing well at other clubs. But didn't do well for us because, you know, we finished ninth. I don't know about how much that being back in USL 1. I think guys are competitive and wherever they can play, they want to play and they want to play hard and they want to play well. But you're right. The experience can sometimes mean set in the ways or you feel like you're better or you feel like you're too good. The experience also can be maturity where you are coming in and you know you got a job to do and you're not going to muck around about it. Another rant. Casuals. We've talked about casuals a lot tonight. Casuals keep this club afloat. Without them, Breeze would be as empty and as annoying as Warner Park, which is near Omaha, which is where Union Omaha plays. Real fans, quote-unquote, don't own the game day experience as much as they'd like to. People sitting in the covered corner don't give a flock about the flock end and can barely hear them over the trumpet. That's fine with me, honestly, to have most of the casuals in the stadium. You know, the what's missing, I think, and we talked about this a little bit with some other folks earlier this season, is that all the chants and all the songs are only in the flock end. If you go to games anywhere else in the world, it's the entire stadium singing the songs. That's not so much the case in the United States. Not to say that all the United States teams and game day experiences have to be European by any means, but that is a little bit of a bummer, I think. Okay. Rant. Firing Shore after the pandemic year. Daryl Shore, this is our first year coach. Firing Daryl Shore after the pandemic year was a mistake I feel we're paying for to this day. Rob's response. I'm not convinced Daryl Shore was fired. I think he had a 2-year contract. The contract expired, and I don't think he wanted to sign it again. I don't think the club wanted to sign him either. But I think my sense, having been close to the club at that time, was that he was always coming in to get it started, and then he was going to move on. That was kind of always his plan. He was going to get, just like Peter Wilt, got the thing off the ground and then left. Daryl Shore got the thing off the ground and left and went on to the international game. I think you could make a case that it would have been better to have him on for one more year. I don't disagree with that entirely. I think he would have, with him, we would have fared better in 2021 than we did with Carl Craig. I think that I can be safe in speculating that. But again, I think you're right about that. But again, I don't think he was really fired exactly. Okay, this last one, I love this one so much. Being quirky is fun only if you're winning. It's hard to be enthusiastic about a new cool kit or promo when your team is failing. And I think fans pull back from their support or engagement because they don't want to be cringe. I talked about this 2 years ago, maybe, on the podcast, that the Harlem Globetrotters, I know 20 years ago, I was about to write a book. I won't go into it right now, but I did a lot of research on the Harlem Globetrotters. And as it turns out, they were actually a real professional basketball team at first. They were what's called a barnstorming team. Back in the day, in the 1930s and 40s, before the NBA, there were some organized leagues, but there were also these teams that weren't in a league. And they would just go around the country where basketball was purely entertainment. There was no standings or championships or whatever. There were these teams that would just come to town and play against your local team so you could watch it for fun. Like, then that was it, right? And the Harlem Globetrotters was one of those teams, and was one of the only all-black teams in the country. So these black guys would come into Davenport, Iowa, or whatever, and play in a barn, and everybody have a good time. But they were so good that the games were boring for them. And they started to do the tricks and the whatnots. And their coach told them, you can do the tricks, you can do the funny stuff, you can spin the ball on your finger, you can do the weird dribbling, whatever, only when you have an insurmountable lead. So you can do the fun stuff, but only if you're really, really good. You can do the fun, funny, entertaining stuff, but only after you already know you're going to win the game. And that's exactly what our Reddit commenter here is getting at. That the funny stuff doesn't work if you're not good also. Because it is a bit cringe. If you're goofy and fun and great on Twitter but suck on the field. it's just not as funny. The humor part, the quirky part, isn't as quirky or humorous. It's just like you're trying to make up for something. So anyway, excellent observation there. Okay, another rant. Goal celebrations this year were strange to me. A lot of anger and defiance. I don't know why I didn't like seeing that. I mean, isn't an us against the world mentality a good thing? I suppose it showed me an underdog mentality or a lack of confidence. Now, I'm going to push back on this one a little bit because I'm not sure I observed the same thing. I know there was when Stephen Payne scored against Chattanooga, he ripped his shirt off and was looking like, that defiant was a look there. There was a goal in Richmond where our guys went and were jawing with their fans a little bit. Maybe one or two other examples, but I think for the most part, well, part of the problem is we just didn't have very many goal celebrations. So when you only score 38 goals or something, 3 or 4 of those, that's suddenly 10% of them are this certain kind. But I think most of our goals celebrations were, when Derek scored the really weird, easy one, early in the match at home against Richmond, the celebration was really muted. When Chaney scored against Fuego, he went right over their technical area and was messing with them. So that is what you're talking about. As you say, I'm not sure why it bothers you, but it bothers you. There's nothing wrong with that. But I think I don't think there were that many of those. But if those that were like that do stick out to you, and that's what you're remembering, I understand that. Okay, rant. Some of the Port-a-Johns need service bad. I had to run out of one before accomplishing my business because the fumes were about made me literally heave. Rants, I have more. That's enough for now. I love that last one. Yes, understood. Rave, finally rave. I flocking love this club. He didn't say flocking. I have to hide just how much I love this club from my family and friends because it borders on weird how much an almost 50-year-old dude invests himself in this. I just want to see them win. For us, yes, but I feel that the club needs it for themselves and more. Let me read that again. For us, yes, but I feel that the club needs it for themselves more. I'm sure they feel the pressure very acutely. I want them to know we're not going anywhere. Well, I'm not going anywhere, and support them, as they say, till death. Thank you, thank you, thank you so much for that. And I will say, I am also an almost 50-year-old dude, and I clearly am not hiding this from my friends and family. I feel like there's two ways you can do it. You can either hide it, or you could have a podcast. There's no like in between. At some point, if you're not going to hide it, you got to lean into it, and that's what I'm doing, right? So you're like, I'll play it cool but casual, while internally being just like burning with passion, and in a really really sour mood when they lose, and really unreasonably happy when they win, and following along and listening to a podcast about soccer. I mean, about your third division club. That's one way to do it, and just kind of playing it chill while inside burning with that fire. Or you could be just put it out there and have a podcast or whatever, because that's like, I wouldn't be as good as hiding it. I don't know, but I feel you. It is weird. And there are times, and we, you know, talked a lot about casual fans and stuff. And there are times when I wish I could be casual and forget about it. And be like, oh, yeah, whatever, it's fine. And not be nervous all day on a Saturday, and not be sour all day on a Sunday. But as I said before, I've been a soccer fan since I was 10 years old. Before we had soccer in the United States. I mean, we had soccer in the United States, but we didn't have – there was a period in the 80s when we didn't have professional teams to follow. This is after NASL and before MLS. And, you know, in the 80s also, you didn't really have, you could conceivably get a satellite dish or whatever, but you didn't have Premier League on television. Well, there's no Premier League yet, but you didn't have European soccer on television. You had the World Cup every now and again, you know. The 94 World Cup changed the game here. Then you had MLS, then you had USL, and you had everything else. Growing up loving soccer and not having soccer to watch, and now having soccer all around us all the time, I can't help it. I can't, I have like a whole lifetime of fandom to live from now until whenever I'm done. So I got to get it all in. So yeah, I'm weird about it. I'm weird about this tiny little third division club. And not even the town I live in. I don't even live in Madison, you guys. I live out in Mount Horeb, which if this was England, Madison would have three Premier League sides, and we'd have our own League One team out here, or our own championship team in Mount Horeb. You know, every little town has a professional club. But we don't have that here. So this little third division club that plays on really, really shitty AstroTurf in a 100-year-old stadium and wearing pink, and with flamingos on their chest, and when you say it out loud, it's weird. And like just even going to a game is kind of weird, but like having the kind of passion that we do for it. And I will say, you know, if you're going to write that much and be that thoughtful on a Reddit thread, like you're a weirdo. You're not a casual, right? So like the recurring theme of not, you know, mild disdain for casuals, or just at least a sense that we wish there weren't so many casuals, or wish the casual to weirdo ratio was different. You know, we're all weirdos, and we love this club, and we want more people to love it. I think that's what it comes down to. It's not so much that we are annoyed by the casuals, because, you know, let's face it, casuals are kind of paying the bill. But we wish there were more weirdos. We wish the casuals would catch the fever, right? And be more, I don't know, passionate about it and get in with us and listen to the podcast and wear the shirts on every Friday and feel it and really, really feel it. So we really feel it. The season is over. We will learn more. We'll talk more with everybody else. We'll get everybody else to kind of weigh in. I'll maybe ask for some thoughts on these fan questions next week. But we'll talk about who is our MVP, who is our most improved, who's our biggest surprise, who we want to definitely want to keep, who we can let go. Not that we have any say over anything, but we'll speculate, you know. We'll talk about next season. We'll talk about, you know, the new clubs that are coming in and what the schedule is going to look like. And we'll start to think about all of that next week. And I hope you'll tune in. Until then, have a great week. I hope you enjoy the semifinals this weekend. If you plan on to watch, I'll definitely tune in, probably. That's it, folks. Thanks for listening. Talk to you soon.